Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 114, your one-stop for manga news and commentary for the week of September 22nd, 2014. I am your main host, Derek, and I am joined by a noisy cat, apparently.
And me.
Indeed, one sec.
I'm not the cat.
I don't know, can you hear the cat?
I can hear the cat. It's very cute, but tell the cat to fly, please.
That's not going to happen. He's gonna continue making a fuss until I let him out, which is not happening. So, all right then. It's been a bit of a week, especially considering that we are starting this recording at the end of the week, which I'm not ashamed to admit because work has been crazy, like really crazy, crazy to the point where I think I'm going crazy. So yeah.
Well, at the time we're recording this, it's your mom's birthday, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So as soon as we finish up here, I need to go buy her a gift before she gets home from work. I also need to empty the dishwasher for her because, you know, it's the little gestures for things that you normally don't do that really count.
You normally don't do. How about you just do them anyway?
See, I have a very bad habit of not doing them. So.
Yeah, thank you too. Right.
Yeah. Well, I say let's go ahead and get on with the news, starting with the Japanese comic rankings for the week of September 8th through the 14th. And in 10th place, what do we have in 10th place?
We have Mahoka Koko no Retosei in Volume 2.
Mm. In 9th place, we have Maho Tsukai no Yomi, Volume 2.
8th place, Toriko, Volume 31.
7th place, Batum, Volume 15.
6th place, Food Wars, Shokugeki no or Shokugeki no Soma, Volume 9.
5th place, Mahoka Koko no Retosei Kyukosenhen, Volume 2.
I'm guessing it's like the other one, but it's probably a spin-off. Anyway, 4th place, Bleach, Volume 64.
3rd place, Natsumi's Book of Friends, Volume 18.
2nd place, Kimi ni Todoke, Volume 22.
And in 1st place, we have One Piece, Volume 75, on its second week on the list. Alright, and moving on, we have the New York Times manga bestseller list for the week of September 7th through 13th. And in 10th place, we have
Out in the Country of Clover, Knight's Knowledge, Volume 2.
In 9th place, we have Skip Beat, Volume 33.
8th place, Attack on Titan, No Regrets, Volume 1.
7th place, Noragami, Stray God, Volume 1.
6th place, Attack on Titan, Volume 1.
Good grief. 5th place, Nisekoi, False Love, Volume 5.
4th place, Attack on Titan, Volume 13.
3rd place, Mayo Chiki, Volume 7.
2nd place, One Piece, Volume 72.
1st place, Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds, Volume 6.
Yes, remember, Yu-Gi-Oh! Came before One Piece.
Yeah, but this is One Piece's second week on the list, and they're remaining strong at 2nd place. I'd rather have a manga remain strong at 2nd place than be at 1st place 1 week and then drop off the list the 2nd week.
Like Naruto?
Yeah. Yeah, and it is One Piece is currently kind of mirroring how One Piece is selling in Japan, namely that it chooses its high spot on the list and then it stays there for 2 weeks. So
yeah, that's true.
Good for it. All right, North American anime and manga releases for the week of September 14th through the 20th, and for anime releases we start with the Dragon Ball Z Season 7 Uncut Blu-ray set.
Ghost in the Shell, Arise, Border 3 Blu-ray Japanese Collector's Edition Import. That's a mouthful to say.
Yep, Fairy Tail, DVD and Blu-ray Part 12.
Next we have Majestic Prince for Blu-ray and DVD Collection 2.
We have Ranma 1/2 Blu-ray Set 3 Special Edition and DVD Set 3.
Next, we have Valbrave, The Liberator, Blu-ray Complete Set, Season 1 Set.
And, of course, good old Aniplex. $149.98, good grief.
Well, it's Blu-ray, it's got great quality, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, Let's see, we've also got Yu-Gi-Oh! Zeal Season 1, DVD Set 1.
That's cool.
Yep, and for manga releases, we have...
We don't have that much, apparently. We have Bokurano, Ars, Graphic, Volume 11.
We've got Genshiken's Second Season, Volume 5.
Okay. Kamen, Volume 1. I almost said Kamen Rider, but I didn't see a writer anywhere.
And also Terraform Ars, Volume 2.
I guess.
Let's see, for other releases, we have Attack on Titan, Before the Fall novel.
Attack on Titan guidebook, Inside and Outside.
And we have Cooking Mama 5, Bon Appetit, for the Nintendo 3DS.
El Minage, Gothic, for the PC, and Steam. Hmm.
Oh. Fairy Fencer, F, for the PlayStation 3.
Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm Revolution for the PlayStation 3, Xbox, and Xbox 360. Also on Steam, I think.
Is it? Oh.
I think so, that one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have Phantasm Japan Fantasies Light and Dark from and About Japan Story Collection.
I want that. Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call for Nintendo 3DS game. Oh, I'll wait to see the other releases for next week.
Yes, indeed.
And I'll be, like, just sad.
Sad because you don't have a 3DS, huh?
Oh, I thought about trying to get a 2DS, but I was like, no, what do they need a 3DS to play the game anyway? It's possible.
Well, anyway, what other news do we have?
Yes, other news. Win a free meal with Seven Deadly Sins manga creator. Apparently, this only applies to Japan, so why am I bringing this up? Just to make us feel sad. Yeah. Just to make us feel sad, I guess.
Yeah, I feel sad.
Yeah, well, you should, and they should feel bad, too. Just bring this up and stuff. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure. It's really for, hang on. The October 1st issue of Weekly Shonen Jump magazine will offer readers a pleasant surprise, a chance to have a free meal with Nakaba Suzuki, the writer and artist behind The Seven Deadly Sins. The meal will be for only 10 lucky winners. Yeah, since it says the October 1st issue of Weekly Shonen magazine, I assume that's only for the Japanese readers.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, they barely have their stuff available legally anywhere outside of Japan.
Yeah. Well, for those who are in Japan or somehow are going to Japan, the deadline is October 31st. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. And enjoy it. Alright, what else do we have?
I mean, Monthly Comic Gene will launch online comic site with Pixiv in October. Huh.
Okay.
Interesting.
What exactly will it do?
Okay, it will not. Okay. Sorry. Well, launch the online comic website, Gene Pixiv, on October 27th. The website will feature series by popular authors on Pixiv and manga spin-offs of current series running in Monthly Comic Gene. And the lineup consists of series I do not even recognize. At all. Except the T-Rex Woman looks interesting. I like to read that.
T-Rex?
Yeah, it says T-Rex no Kano. T-Rex na Kanojo, the T-Rex Woman.
Dude. That sounds kind of awesome.
I don't know how that's going to work. All I can think about is how does that work, but okay.
We can make it work.
Yeah.
Yep. Right, what else do we have?
Next, okay. So Shonen Jump's been like giving these little sneak previews over the past couple of weeks, and I finally decided to just, you know, okay, so this is what it's about. So Shonen Jump Plus debuts with over 30 monthly manga for free. Now the funny thing is, most of these free manga, I think all of these, are actually already available like some years before. And
yeah, but it's the first time that they're available digitally like this. Or at least all together digitally like this.
The lineup includes a bunch, like some by Hirohiko Araki, Akira Amano, the creator of Kuroko no Basuke, Akira Toriyama, of course, the digital reprint of the Majin Buu Saga, apparently, just for that one. So far, there hasn't been anything about the One Piece. You know, there was a bit of a sneak preview about the One Piece, a little hype about the One Piece.
The One Piece.
Upsetting they do not put this up. How dare they? But yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah, and I believe there was a series on here by by a mangaka who had a series actually on Bleach Shonen Jump, but it got ended. I think it's the one by the creator of Lock On, although that was way before digital version of Bleach Shonen Jump appeared. So just saying, though. These people still exist. They're just having trouble staying around because there are people just, you know, wowing the other readers better than them. And for the last bit of news, Attack on Titan creator Isayama says the manga is going to end in about 3 years.
Huh.
I'll take your word on that, buddy.
don't believe manga artists when they say their manga is going to end. They lie. Remember, Bleach said it was going to end long ago, but, you know, or at least they announced that it was going to end soon, and it's been going on for, like, a good 2 years now.
You mean the final arc?
Yeah, the final arc.
Oh, my God.
And it keeps going. It won't stop. And then, Naruto is constantly saying, oh, yeah, we're close to the end, etc.
Oh, Naruto's going to end, don't worry. It's finally gotten to that point, that high point.
Yeah.
Not surprising, but yeah. So, So, first, the first time we heard him, he said he wanted to finish the series within 20 book volumes. That was impossible. And then his editor said that the series will end in 3 to 4 years. And now he says 3 years. This time, not 4 years, 3 years.
Well, was there a year between the two when he said the first thing and when he said the second thing?
Probably, but if he says in 3 years, and since the series is monthly,
so that's
12 chapters each month, that's about
24, and then
each volume has 36 chapters. So each volume has 4 chapters at least, right? Right? Or 5? 4. I think it's 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 4. I think around this time it's 4 now, so.
Yeah.
3 years, 12 times, that's 36 chapters at least. 36 chapters. We're in like chapter 61 now, I think, as the current, before the coming month. So, they'll end about the 100th chapter. You know, kind of like Full Metal Alchemist did. That's good.
I can see that.
But here's the interesting though. He says that he's pretty much, I know it says something about, okay. Well, I remember that he says something about how he was done with all the mysteries and stuff. And now he's trying to actually start wrapping it up, from the looks of it. You know, with the whole Attack on Politics, it's over now. So now, we're back to Attack on People in the Wall.
Hopefully Titans will feature in this manga about Titans soon.
Yeah, fleshy Titans, which are pretty much Mexicans. I mean, fleshy Titans.
What?
I don't know what I'm saying anymore, but you know, it's not Attack on Politics anymore, just remember that.
Mm-hmm. What, are you trying to say that the Titans represent illegal immigrants?
I was not even saying that. What the heck?
And the people represent jobs.
Attack on people. That just sounds wrong.
Attack on
that sounds wrong.
Attack on Jose.
Attack on Jose.
Sorry. Let's see. Was there anything else that we needed to talk about?
No, that's actually it. That's the only interesting news that there was.
Okay. All right, in that case, let's go ahead and move on to the manga recommendation and review. And this week, we have 2 volumes to go over. Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Volume 2, and Genshiken, Second Season, Volume 5. And I say, let's go over Genshiken first, shall we?
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, this is part of something that I've read over quite a few times. So, starting off, we have a pretty big chapter there. You remember how it begins, right?
I remember how it began.
So just to let people know. So basically we begin with Madarame and Saki finally having the talk. He finally admits to her how he's felt about her since the first series. And she turns him down because she's still in love with her boyfriend who is barely a character. But you know what? If we're going to have characters that are just there to to basically be the main character's significant other, then I'm actually glad that we're doing it where the guy is barely a character and the girl's the character that we actually get the focus on. You know, because so often in a lot of shonen manga especially, you have, oh, look, I am the plucky main character, and oh, look, here's a girl. She is essentially, she is a transportation device for breasticles instead of being an actual character.
What?
You know what I mean.
Well, this girl is my crush. This girl I like, but she doesn't appear much. And she only appears whenever something happens and I have to go help her. And
exactly.
She does stuff that makes me like her, but the readers actually are like, why do you like this girl? The girl's so stupid. The other girl's better. I'm talking about Detective Hitman Reborn.
I was kind of getting that vibe, yes. But anyway, so, I mean, that was one of the... this is kind of an interesting part of this series because, I mean, starting off, I was very curious. I always thought that the Madarame not telling Saki how he felt at the end of Genshiken was always a very interesting move because, you know, sometimes some people just can't take that step and sometimes they feel that it's better not to confess to someone how they feel and therefore not, you know, ruining their relationship as friends. So I thought that was... Yep, it does. And honestly, yeah, this scene, when I read it the first time and then when I saw it in the anime... It kind of made me cry a little bit, just because I was like, oh, Madarame, no! It's like, you poor nerd who I am in no way inserting myself into and applying my own past relationship trauma to. Oh, you should be happy. But yeah, so it turns out for the better, but ultimately. But then you have a fun scene where Keiko... Sasahara's sister reveals that she knew, and then everyone else reveals, yep, we all knew that Madarame had a thing for Saki.
Yep.
And it's pretty hilarious. And then after that, we go back to after this time focusing on the old characters, we go back to some of the new ones, and we focus, a little bit more.
Sato, Yajima, and Yoshitake.
Yeah, and then we go back to just we go back to random stories with them. One of them being they find something and they're like, "Oh, look, it's an anal plug," and I'm like, "Wait, what?"
Yeah, I was like, "Wait a second." I was like, "Why is this?"
It's
and then it turned out it wasn't.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, and then. So, let's see. Yeah, but then we find out that just as they're about to confront Hato, because they're like, oh, wait, is this your butt plug? They were going to ask him, and then Ono shows up wearing a ridiculous cosplay, and then we find out that it's actually part of her cosplay outfit. It's a fastener to keep the armor that she's wearing closed.
That does not look like a fastener.
Yeah, it doesn't really, but...
It looks like a weird pacifier.
It does, kind of. And yeah, so you got that moment, and then let's see. We go, oh yeah, and then we have another chapter that was kind of an interesting one, because it was, because you've got Ono, who is kind of getting close to graduation. She doesn't know what to do, and she's all sort of self-conscious. She's wondering if she should get a job, etc. And then... You know, and then, she's wondering whether she should, you know, start selling her cosplay, or whatnot. And you've got her, Tanaka, who's like, oh, no, that's not that. You know, we don't know what the future will bring. And she starts getting depressed and trying to do a more erotic photo shoot, which, for fans of Ono, this was a great chapter because even though her breasts are always front and center in any panel that she's in this case, the artist decided to... exaggerate it even more, shall we say.
It's I didn't really enjoy that. You mean, I might be weird for saying, I'm not a big fan of big breasts.
But you do bring a good point with not really enjoying it because, you know, it's kind of one of those moments where if you just look at the pictures, you're like, oh, look, fan service. But then at the same time, when you're reading the story, you get into, you know, the actual character, you know, what the characters are thinking, why they're behaving the way they are in this setting, you start to get a little uncomfortable because you can clearly tell that Ono is, you know, is has some really serious turmoil, internal turmoil, and she may be making choices that aren't the best ones just now. But fortunately, it doesn't go very far, and Tanaka tells her, "Hey, look, sorry, I didn't mean what I said. It's like I want to make a living, and I want to be able to support you, and I'll wait for you, and I'm going to keep making cosplay." And she's like, "Okay, in that case, I'll wait for you while I take an extra year of school." And then she passes out because she's drunk. And then you end the chapter finding out that Madarame quit his job, and oh boy, do I relate to that.
Okay, so the thing about Madarame is that the reason he quit the job is because he said, "I decided to be a loser, me." Pretty much me.
Hey.
I think that's what it translates to, right? I mean,
it's
loser, neat, whatever it was.
Yeah, well, neat is not an employment, not employed or in training or something. You know, basically, a neat is someone that doesn't have a job or isn't currently going to some kind of school to get a job. But yeah, so you get Madarame, who's basically saying, "Oh, yeah, I'm gonna, you know." He's just like, "You know what, I've just decided to be a loser." Yeah, so he quit his job.
At least he's honest.
Yeah. And
Some people are like, "I don't want to be a loser." And then they end up being a loser and become more depressed about it.
Yep. And we also move on to Hato, who is suddenly developing, you know, how he has that, when he's a guy, he has that sort of manifestation of his inner self that is dressed up, that looks like he does when he's dressed up as a girl. Or at least how he looked when he was originally dressed up as a girl. But then when he turned in, normally when he dresses up as a girl, that delusion goes away. But this time it's been replaced by one that looks exactly like his senpai, who looked like, Kaminaga-senpai? Yeah, who looks like who he based his original girl look on. Except I always thought it was kind of interesting with her design.
The real one?
Yeah, the real one. Because it's like she's... You know, she's designed to be an attractive female, but at the same time, what we have the way her eyes are drawn, it always makes it look like she's always got dark spots under her eyes, or she's got bags under her eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I don't know, it's just so weird because it doesn't really look like I'd imagine such bags and whatnot would actually look. So, I don't know. But yeah, and then... Let's see, then we move on. Okay, what else was there? Oh, yeah, there we go. And then you have Keiko shows up and tries to get Madarame to come over to her. Cabaret club or whatever it is where she's a host. And then, yeah, that's pretty much the main focus of what happens. I mean, overall... After we got past the big, let's reveal what Hato's beef is. You know, that in the previous volume, this one kind of went back to the just sort of episodic nature of the story with a bit of carryover between each other. So, I don't know, what did you think of this volume?
It was pretty okay, I guess, It was good for Madarame to finally get his little bit all wrapped up, because I'm not saying it was bothering me, but I'm just saying that.
Not your favorite. Actually, I
didn't care if it was wrapped up or not, to be honest.
That's kind of how I felt, honestly.
I was like, okay, that's fine. I guess maybe wasn't bugging the whole time, but hey, you know, it's kind of more like for him. I just kind of felt like the characters didn't have meddled in that. Like, you know, they could have just shoved them in. I mean, I don't understand friends want to do what friends want to do, but sometimes people just shouldn't get into personal business, even if it is for the good of those people. Mm. I'm just saying, because he'll barely handle it himself. Even if he probably would have hung on to forever, but still. You know,
Indeed.
I just don't like the idea of seeing someone, you know, have their resolution done because of the involvement of other character, of one.
Right. Yeah, it is kind of interesting how he was basically forced into it.
Yeah.
Because of the other characters, but in some ways.
And then he said, "No more peeking." He's like, "Okay, guys, no more peeking."
Yeah, but in a way, it kind of was necessary for him because, as we know, he wouldn't have done it himself.
That's true.
Never would have gotten around to telling her how he feels. So, yeah, I think 5 volumes in, where are you? How do you feel about the second season versus the original series?
I want to read more.
Okay. So it does interest you. Are you as intrigued by it as you were by the
the first one? The first season, that was okay. There were lots of things wrapped up, of course, you know, then how some of the old characters, they eventually finished their stuff and moved on, and some of the other old characters who were younger at the time stayed until they can move on. Mm. That was okay, but with this one, the Fujoshi thing is just getting on my nerves.
Yeah. That is kind of the thing. It is one of those ones that it's kind of hard to, you know, you had the first one was the main focus on just nerds in general with a bit of Fujoshi stuff thrown in towards the end. Yeah. This one is definitely, the focus is a lot more on the Fujoshi, which does kind of mean that you end up with two distinct series that are aimed at two different types of readers.
Yep.
So, which is a shame. Personally, it doesn't bother me at all. I just enjoy reading the characters. The new characters, as I've said, are good enough for me to continue enjoying them, and then the old characters coming in here and there are definitely a lot of fun. I just kind of wish that there were certain ones that were focused on more than they are. So which
all I can say is Yoshitaka needs to be kept on a leash.
Yeah.
Seriously, that woman is just insane sometimes.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Funny thing is all the characters are still younger than us, sadly.
Wow.
Yeah, no,
that makes me, makes me feel weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not younger in the sense that you get with a lot of other shows where you start enjoying a show and you're like, oh, this is a great anime/manga, and oh, these characters are awesome. Ooh, this is a very sexy character. She's 14 years old. What the hell? For example, when you know, that moment when you, as a 12 to 16-year-old, and you were watching Sailor Moon secretly because you were going through puberty and you were oddly fascinated by this show that featured just girls. And then you're like, oh, yes, I like this. A lot of this show is annoying and stupid, but there are certain parts that I like, especially when they actually get to the story and when it's focused on the girls, because me being a sad, lonely 14-year-old, I developed crushes on cartoon characters all the time.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, I like Amy, I like Makoto, yay, I wish they were real. And then I go back to it as an adult and I'm like, I remember having a crush on this cartoon character when I was 14. When the character was 14. The character is still 14. I am a lot older than 14 right now. I may need to see a professional here. Anyway, yep. What was I even talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about. We're talking about Genshin.
Yeah, the characters being younger than us still, and during the connection between them, the characters still being younger as I get older. Yeah, that is kind of a weird experience. Having characters that you like and relate to, and then years later you go back to the work and the characters are still, that you once related to, are still the same age that they were at the time, and suddenly you don't quite have that same connection anymore.
You know, I can totally understand how the One Piece fans feel, but, well, at least now the characters are actually, the majority of them are actually adults now.
Yeah, let's just say that with One Piece, as I read it from a young tot to being older, the objects of my cartoon crushes tended to change a little bit. Where once 16-year-old me was like, "Ah, Nami's so cute," now 20-something-year-old me is like, that Robin. So much less likely to be arrested for having a cartoon crush on that one if I ever go to Canada.
But Nami's 18, you fool.
Yeah, that's about a decade younger than me, so that's weird. Jesus, she's only 18? Jeez, it's still...
No, she was 18 when the series started.
Was she? I don't think she was.
Now she's 20.
Was she?
Yeah, because Luffy was
17. Oh, yeah, he was 17. Oh, yeah, that's
Robin
right.
Was 28. Now she's 30.
30, yeah. So close.
So close.
No, but anyway, let's talk about Shokugeki no Soma, Volume 2, which, for those of you that have not purchased the volume, it opens up with a volume cover of Erina. So, yes.
Is she lying on her back?
That's the one.
In her chef outfit.
Yes.
I knew it.
Ah, of course. But anyway, let's move on. And all right, so this volume, we get introduced. They go to the... He finds his dorm. There's fan service flashbacks that are kind of freaking weird when you consider what the character looks like now. Turns out that Megumi is living there as well, and of course there's the typical walk in on the other person in the bath while you yourself are naked.
Mm-hmm.
And Megumi continues to suffer. And then we move on, we meet all the other weird characters, etc. And we meet the seventh seat of the Totsuki Council of Ten, Satoshi Ishiki. They have a cooking competition to see who is better and don't, yeah, etc. We get people eat and there is fan service, because, of course. And then, of course, it's immediately followed by fan service of the other variety. And then, basically, Soma is all, oh, hey, I'm going to join the Council of Ten. And it's like, wait, how are you? It's like, look, we need to explain this. And we get to see Erina in a shokugeki against this member from a club. She easily beats him and steals his classroom. And she's all cool and collected. And, yeah, I'm a bad self. And then she hears Soma's name and she immediately snaps.
That's just funny.
Yes, yes it is. And people wonder why I wish she was in this series more often, because she is hilarious. Whenever
he is her, he is the fuse to her ticking time bomb.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's
less the fuse and more
lighter.
The lighter, yeah. But yeah, or the clock, or I don't know. Analogies. But yeah, I do have to say, I really do like that, you know, that contrast, that the comedy of the contrast between the cool, collected character who immediately turns into a petulant child whenever they're faced with a specific someone. And so, yep, and then there's more, let's see, and then we get onto the story where we meet Ikumi Mito, who is also known as Nikumi because she's all about meat.
Yeah, the problem with that is that I keep remembering her name is Nikumi when it's really Ikumi.
Yeah, it hardly matters. It's her nickname. But yeah, they meet the Soma ends up facing against her for the sake of the what's
Dawn
this place?
RS.
The Dawnbury Bowl, as they call it in English. But yeah, and so I also have to say that the introduction of Ikumi is kind of hilarious because three guesses as to which nationality she's supposed to represent.
U.S.
Yes.
A. I totally forgot the last letter.
Oh, you moron. You're probably thinking U.S.B. Wait, B? And in the back of your head, boobies.
I actually was going to say B, but I was like, wait, it's A, not B.
The United States of boobies. Because, like many other characters in here, this is a very sexualized character, and she is wearing a United States bikini top. A bikini top made of a fabric that has the pattern of the United States flag on it.
That's totally normal over here.
Yes, 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 it is. Okay, I have to say, does at any point does it mention that she's American?
I don't think so.
Then why the hell is she wearing an American flag bikini?
She likes red, white, and blue?
I guess, I don't know. It's I don't know, it's kind of weird. That's one thing that with the introduction of her, we kind of get this sense that, and we'll see this further on as we go through, that this series is very weird in that it likes to take foreign characters or characters that look foreign or act foreign, because Ikumi behaves very much in the way the stereotypical American does, you know, loud, brash, and not wearing very many clothes.
Yeah,
because apparently, the stereotypical American is from Los Angeles, which makes sense considering that's one of the areas in the U.S. that's closest to Japan. But
the San Diegan is very insulted just because.
Yeah, he was like, why don't I get to see the L.A. Bikini Babes? Is that it? No? Okay. But nonetheless, you know, it's really, as I was saying, is that this series likes to do what a lot of typical, what a lot of other manga and anime like to do, which has have the foreigner character, you know, especially in
Gaijin, that's what they call him, right?
Gaijin, yeah. Well, especially in the harem series, where you got to have that token American character, essentially, like
and
for example, Ayori Aoshi, which has one of the girls is Tina, who is actually American and actually has an American name, but one of the jokes is that she's so obsessed with Japan and spends so much time in Japan that she's forgotten how to speak English well. And that explains why her voice actress speaks English about as well as your average Japanese voice actress does.
That's a nice excuse.
It's pretty hilarious, yes, because, I mean, you take a series like Genshiken where you've got Angela and Sue that show up and, like, they're American and they're speaking English, but the person speaking English is a Japanese voice actress, and it's very clear that she is a Japanese voice actress. But with this one, with Tina, they have a total excuse, which is stinking hilarious. But getting back to Shokugeki no Soma, the interesting thing, and this will be seen later on, is that it's like the manga wants to have the foreign characters, but doesn't want to have actual foreigners in their, you know, in their series. Like, for example, Ikumi behaves like a typical American. She wears the piece of clothing with the American flag pattern on it, which, by the way, Japan, nobody actually does that here except like on the 4th. And then you've got later on, you've got the Aldinis who themselves are actually Italian, except they're half Italian, half Japanese.
Yeah, those are half fun.
And it's kind of like, it's as if the author can only stand to have characters that are half foreign. You know, as long as there's some Japanese in there, it's okay. And then you've got later on another character who was picked up by Alice from northern European town, yeah, Rio, Kurokiba, which there you're just like, okay, what are the odds that she would find a genius Japanese kid that happens to be living in northern Europe? And I mean, Japanese people live in northern Europe. There are quite a few there, but at the same time, it's just like, it just seems odd that all the characters that are from elsewhere always seem to have a tie back to Japan in this series, which I'm not sure what the deal is. But I'm going to have to... Anyway,
I think we had this discussion before, but it's because the writer just is able to more relate to their own nationality, their own region.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like how, a Finnish writer would make their main character Finnish, male or female.
Well, yeah.
But in some ways, they do like the other culture, but they still want to keep their character to being, you know, Finnish or something, and try to, like, at the same time, not, you know.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it
makes... Not make too hard on them, you know?
It makes sense, but at the same time, you know,
Plus, it takes place on Earth, you know.
It makes sense, and I mean, I've said it before that people like to write what they're most comfortable with, what they're most familiar with, but at the same time, it's something you gotta break out of, and when it's as obvious as it is in this series, it becomes, you know, it kind of has become something where the author should probably realize that they're doing that if they're not realizing it, doing it on purpose, and decide, okay, I need to make this, you know, if I'm going to be culturally diverse, I need to actually be culturally diverse. But I mean, of course, Ikumi later on wears a different type of bikini top, but it's just so...
It sort of resembles Yoko's.
It does, yeah. So it maybe, I don't know, maybe her purpose is just, you know, she's there to wear all the bikinis of manga and anime. And the American bikini top is just such an iconic type of bikini top. But at the same time, I'm just like, okay, that's the fact that she's introduced wearing an American flag on her boobs. Kind of makes me think, okay, what's the deal here? And I'm looking up the characters on Wikipedia right now to see if she's meant to be like a Japanese American that came back to Japan or something. I don't know. But either way, I guess it does kind of make sense to have the character whose specialty is meat be American because, you know, meat. It's our thing.
We specialize in burgers and french fries and fast food and heart attacks. I mean.
Yes. Let's see. From the start dorm. Ah, geez, it doesn't have her.
Yeah, I don't trust Wikipedia as much. Because it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a problem. It doesn't have her. It's not complete, so it doesn't have her on there. Oh, well. But yeah, I do also want to say that the most unintentionally hilarious panel in here is as, you know, is after Soma's decided he's going to join the Donburi Don and going to face Ikumi in a shokugeki. She's trying to podcast with a bunch of foreign words. Ah! And as she's leaving, she says, I'm going to take that big-headed, overconfident transfer student and teach him the real pleasures of meat. And as she's saying that, she's licking her lips. And, of course, it's a massive fan service panel. And my horrible, horrible, horrible mind immediately starts snickering.
I just read that, like, oh, okay, he's gone.
I was like, the real pleasures of meat, huh? But, yeah, needless to say, myself being a massive carnivore, I think that she may be one of my favorite characters. And she would be my favorite character even if she dressed like a nun. Because it's not about the clothes, it's about the fact that finally here is a female... is a female fictional character that appreciates meat as much as I do.
Oh, that's why you like her so much.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I'm hungry.
Yeah.
This is not a good...
Caesar, have someone who likes the food you need to cook for you.
Yeah, I know. It's like
you cook it.
She's an expert at cooking meat. Sign me up. Otherwise, I may end up having cat tonight if he doesn't stop meowing.
Oh, dear. I never heard of cat food. I heard of cat food, but not cat food.
Yeah, and of course there's also another one, really ridiculous, one of those four comics between chapters where it's the day of the Shokugeki, Miss Ikumi's morning, and it shows her trying on different bikini tops. You're like, this is really weird, but also kind of hilarious. And anyway, we have the, we have the competition. Ikumi does her cooking meat while wearing a bikini top, which, let me tell you, that's kind of a stupid thing to do.
You get burned, it's your fault. But then again, this is not meant to be realistic, it's just meant to be...
Well, it's basically food porn and regular porn in one, together at last.
Surprising they mix so well.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, I mean, considering that... So often food is used in courtship rituals around the world, whether it be in ways that I have no idea about, because I'm pretty sure there's some kind of ritual society that has a kind of a ritual meal that is eaten as part of, I don't know. Anyway, but also, you know, you take someone on a date, you go get something to eat.
Yeah.
Which mostly, and maybe the idea is... You feed one of their hungers, and hopefully now that they are no longer distracted by that hunger, they are ready for a different kind of hunger.
Actually, so they have more energy for that other kind of hunger.
Well, maybe that's why you eat in the dinner and why they say dinner and a movie, not movie and a dinner, because you go to a movie, then you go eat dinner, and then it's like, shall we go to my place? It's like, no, sorry, I still got ribs in here. Oh man. Okay, all right. You want to get sexy? No.
Does not work.
Yeah. Dinner, then a movie to digest, and then back home for sexy times.
Well, dinner and a scary movie. And then, actually, a scary movie home after dinner, then boom.
That sounds like an awful idea.
No. You don't understand. Scary movies are, we might have some kids listening.
No. Trust me. It would not work for me. Have you gotten to the point in Zeta Karen Children where it's revealed that Shiho is absolutely terrified by anything supernatural and scary?
I had no idea.
I'll leave it at that. Apply that to me, maybe.
Well, anyway. Just so you know, it would actually help because science proves that scary movies. Anyway, moving on.
It's more. Yeah, it'd be more like. I take a date to go see a scary movie, and the best I could hope for is a pity quickie. Because he's like, man, what a coward. But anyway, moving on.
I would not deal with animatronic dolls.
Yes. We have the competition, and of course, Soma wins.
It wasn't much. That's his tagline.
Yes, indeed. And of course, we get another one of the girls... drawn in a very suggestive, sexy pose after eating food, which I am actually kind of glad that goes away later on in the series. But, yeah.
And seriously, what's with the rice?
Yes, rice. That's totally rice.
I made rice after this, in case you're wondering. So I'll be like...
Aw. It's like, wow. It's like, find a sexy girl in each and every other specially marked box of rice.
Apparently. Why would rice be in a box is my question. Anyway, but yeah.
Well, so, what? 5-minute rice comes in a box.
Oh. Hey, we cook our rice in a rice cooker.
Yeah, I know. You can cook 5-minute rice in a rice cooker. Actually, I don't even understand 5-minute rice because regular rice doesn't take very long in a rice cooker.
Well, the rice cooker we use takes about 45 minutes to cook the rice.
Really?
It's pretty easy to prepare it anyway because it's just preparing rice.
Yeah, it's not that long. Okay, maybe you know this. What's the difference between just cooking the rice versus using the steamed rice setting? Because with both of them, you take the rice, you put water in, you put it in the pot, then you put water in there, and then it heats up, and the boiling of the water cooks the rice. How is?
I have no idea. I never use a 5-minute rice. I never cook rice.
No, I mean it's not 5-minute rice. I'm talking about using regular rice, and. On my rice cooker, there's a white rice setting, a brown rice setting, and a steamed rice setting. And I don't know what the difference is between steamed and white rice.
The white makes it white. The steam makes it, I guess, more hotter or something? Like more.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's rather than, you know,
cooking. The brown makes it brown, of course.
I mean, I understand the basic concept of steaming rice, you know, rather than putting it in the water and cooking it like that, what you do is you... not a rice cooker, but the traditional method, what you would do is you'd have a pot with water, and then on top of that you put a second layer that you put the rice in, and then the steam boils up and cooks the rice. You know that I can understand the concept there, but it doesn't make sense when you're just putting it in the pot, putting the pot in the rice cooker, putting water in there, and then turning on the steamed rice setting. I don't think I quite understand.
It kind of makes the rice, you know, just... Fluffier? I don't know. I think the water has a purpose in making the rice boil. If you just put the rice in there, it's not going to boil. It's not going to cook at all. It's just because when your rice is put in there, it's all hard.
Well, I know.
You don't have the water in there. It's going to be... It doesn't separate well. I don't know.
You put the water in no matter how you cook it. You do the white rice setting, you put water in. The steamed setting, you put water in. It's just that functionally there doesn't seem to be any difference, and I don't know... Anyway, we're getting distracted.
The water has a purpose. I just don't know what the purpose is. I'm not a chef here. You're a chef. I don't even know. You should be knowing that much. I know. I just put the water in and then the rice. No, I put the rice in and then put the water in because if I put the rice after the water, it kind of floats.
Yeah.
Don't want it floating.
Anyway, yep, let's carry on. So, yeah. So we end the volume with Ikumi falling in love with Soma, and because he's such a good cook, and apparently that's how women fall in love with you. I need to challenge more women to cooking matches. But
Iron Chef, no, you'll lose.
Yeah, and she ends up, and what's really hilarious, she ends up deciding to join the Donbury, but she also ends up dressing up, you know, she ends up dressing, you know, she actually puts on clothes, like her actual school uniform, and she dresses more modestly. And I'm like, huh, that's kind of interesting. So basically, her reaction is rather than let me show my goods to attract men, it's more, hey, I want to show the guy that I'm interested in that I'm more modest or something. I don't know. It doesn't last for very long. And she finds out that Soma didn't actually join. So she's like, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of funny. And then we end up finding out that there's going to be a training camp, and that will be saved for Volume 3. So we spent a lot more time talking about this one, mostly because it deals with food, and I like food. So, and I kept getting distracted. Also, it deals with boobs, and, well, I'll let you fill in the rest of that sentence.
Food and boobs. They actually mix pretty well, especially with this one.
Yes, for many people, this manga is a godsend.
Yep. I mean, there's Jackie Cut in Japan, there's Cooking Papa, there's all these other cooking manga. But this one...
A disappointingly disappointingly serious lack of boobs in those other series.
Yes, well, this one actually brings in both what people like and makes it work well. Not like that one series that has zombies and stuff, but some people like it, some people don't.
I can't stand that series.
That series doesn't make any sense.
Right. Do you feel like moving on to talk about this week's manga?
Yes.
All right. Dang it, why did it crash? One sec. All right, so we start off with the chapter one of, Sporting Salt.
Hiccups and coffee.
Indeed.
It's a Sporting Salt.
Yeah, okay. I have to say, let's see. Yuto Kubota. I gotta look that guy up because I look at his art and I'm thinking, what the heck is this? This looks so... familiar, and I'm not sure why. It's something about the weirdness.
Does it remind you of like what was Assassin's Creed Classroom almost? No, it doesn't.
No, it reminds me of is the later Bakuman.
Oh.
With kind of the weird poses that aren't restrained by the panels that are in positions that no human being could possibly be in.
Oh yeah, most everyone has that that excited face, kind of like similar to the whole duck face from World Trigger. So I'm looking at this series gets far, that thing is gonna become the signature face, and then they'll just start doing every signature face there is.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a pretty interesting first chapter. I mean we meet what's his face? What's the main character's name again?
Chioya,
yeah. And he he's constantly obsessing over people's muscles, and he's crazy.
At first, I was like, wait, why is he obsessed with muscles? Then you get to the point, and you understand, that makes sense.
And then, of course, so he's the main character, and we've got here's the first chapter character that's probably not going to show up ever again. Who is Manabu. He wants to run to impress this girl that he likes, but he's not a good runner, and we've learned about how, you know, this other person wants to be a sports doctor, and he won't leave him alone, and decides, all right, I'm going to help you. And so he shows him how he does something to him, like basically taps him on the back. And then, we also find out that the girl that the guy wants to... go out with, she's going to be moving away, was that it? I think so, yeah. But, yeah, and so he ends up running better because, you know, he had too much stress in his shoulders. And so, what's his face, main character, pushed on that to make him run faster, which I'm like, okay, I'm having a hard time imagining that that would make all that much of a difference, but...
Which one, are you talking about the shoes?
No, I'm talking about where he... Sort of like,
you're talking about how he did that whole, he just pushed on him, put some sort of pressure point, and made him be able to run faster.
Yeah, so, which I was like, okay, that's a little ridiculous, but what the hey. And then we find out that he's part of a school which has, you know, which is all about sports, and he's going to be the one to make sure everyone gets to their national championships, etc. I don't know, this one was not my favorite of the three so far. It's very stylized, but at the same time, it's one of those ones that's just a bit too much style for me, you know? It's rather than, you know, we don't get much, it doesn't feel like we get all that much character depth. Instead, we get characters in exaggerated, weird poses declaring
their intentions. Yeah, that's the one thing I was turned off about. I was like, why are they all making these weird I mean, I understand, I like the exaggerated expressions, but this is just too much. I like to see regular faces.
Yeah, and it's like the, just kind of like, you know, the just in general, the poses, the, I mean, it's a very dynamic art style, but it's also weird. You know,
it'll be totally funny. This actually took some bits from, you know, Joe's Bizarre Adventure. You know, that one just goes crazy with the police.
Certainly feels like that, doesn't it? But yeah. All right. Well, anyway, it was okay. It was interesting, and I'm curious to see where it goes. But it's a bit much for me. You know, not my favorite offering out of those three.
Well, it's still the first chapter. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. And I actually did like it because of the, well, aside from the facial expressions that were too, like, they exaggerated, and I'm like, why are they doing like that, something like that all the time? I like the whole, what's the word, you know, I guess explanations about how the whole sports medicine kind of works, or at least how he does it. It was pretty good because, like the chopstick, I was like, okay, I get that. And I was like, oh. I know the chopstick, when you drop it, like, vertical, like, straight vertical, and it bounces up. I'm like, huh. Mm. I didn't think about the whole running part.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is very much.
The only reason why I ran faster back in middle school and high school is because I just stopped breathing out my mouth so much. Mm. Tie yourself out when you breathe from your mouth. You gotta breathe from your nose.
Well, yeah. I've got sinus issues, so. Anyway, let's move on to Bleach Chapter 597.
Yeah.
Winded by the Shadow. And so, yeah, we get a bit of an opening with that love guy is going to get himself eaten, and the other girl probably got eaten too. So, yeah, and then we get to the Zero Division trying to fight Iwatch, and we see again.
Wonder Vice version 2.
Yeah. We also see What's-Her-Face, the woman, the spider woman person.
I don't know her name.
She has a bunch of what look like bondage slaves as her minions, honestly.
Bondage slaves?
But yeah, they try to attack, and it doesn't work because we get Nyanzol Vizol, who has two tongues.
Just call him Wonder Vice version 2.0.
Yeah, he's basically... He's basically deflecting all the attacks from Iwatch.
Exactly.
And then we finally get Ichigo shows up again, and him and his group are about to be shot out of a cannon again.
Again? So, yep. I thought they were shot out of a cannon array. What the heck?
Yeah. So, well, no, they're about to fire it, so I look forward to seeing what...
Kind of sad Shadow's not in here in these last two pages at all.
True. We have the important ones, at least.
Hey, Chad's important too.
Not according to the manga.
According to the manga, he's not.
Yep. All right. Yep. I thought it was okay. It was an alright chapter. I like that it focused on more than just one part of the story. We're actually getting to see some of the other characters, which that's kind of the problem with Bleach a lot of, is that when it only focuses on one scene, it feels like the chapters aren't as long, even though they are your typical 18 pages. So switching between characters does help like this. So
yeah.
All right. Let's move on to One Piece chapter 761, the Op-Op Fruit.
I like Jinbei's face.
Yeah. As he's seeing that these sea beasts are rampaging in a port town.
Wait, port town? What port town?
I don't know. It doesn't mention.
Oh yeah, look at the little, picture of little ruins. It's very small, but I mean, all the place there for a reason.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the place that Zoro was in during the 2 years. But, alright, let's talk about the chapter itself. We've got animals rampaging, trying to get out, but hurting themselves. You've got pirates looting. You've got the Marines saying, forget them, we'll deal with them later. You've got people rampaging, killing each other.
A little girl crying over a dead papa.
And you've got the continued fight. Luffy trying to fight both Doflamingo's copy and Bellamy at the same time with his arms tied behind his back.
Why did he get his arms tied behind his back? I don't remember
last
that.
Last chapter.
Oh, that was very fast. I didn't notice it.
Yeah, this is kind of a fast-paced scene. And he shows a new attack, which is the octopus stamp, which is basically him flailing like a petulant child, which is hilarious.
That's hilarious.
And yeah, and Doflamingo says the first thing that makes me think, okay, maybe you have a point with your persecution complex, which is that, can you even imagine what humans would do to a fallen celestial dragon? Suddenly I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I would totally know what I would do to a fallen celestial dragon. I would totally, totally wreck them.
Which, like, you know, his dad...
Unless they're actually
his,
good people.
Yeah, his dad was obviously a good person and didn't deserve that, but Doflamingo still being the twit that he is and now no longer having the protection of the other celestial dragons, yeah, I could feel... think people might feel justified being jerks to him. But it turns out that he knows about a crucial treasure that exists within Mary Joie, and he also, you know, he mentions how the op-op fruit has an ability to bring back someone from, you know, is the gift of eternal life, the immortality operation, but in performing it, the surgeon loses their own life. And so suddenly we start to think, oh, wait a minute, wasn't it young kid Law said that he's going to die in 3 years, and yet here he is more than 3 years later. So you're starting to connect the dots of, oh, so that's how he did not die. And then we, as they fight, we jump back to a flashback where you've got Trouble and Diamante training Law and, or something.
And they look doing. Pretty, Okay, I'm probably going to get some hate for saying this. This is pretty pimpy.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just look like, oh my god, these guys are pimpy.
It's a pretty pimp group, yes. And then we finally have the much-promised flashback, and we get to meet Korra, which the Avatar will save us.
Yeah. Korra.
Yeah, and we also get to see, you know, young Baby Five and young Buffalo.
Buffalo.
And they look... they look pretty freaking adorable.
And,
yep, so we get to meet Korra for the first time, and he's a klutz. He's, even though he's very talented, and he's, you know, he is Doflamingo's younger brother, and because of tragedy, you know, something that happened in the past, he can no longer talk. But he's still one of the high-ranking members. He hates kids, and he's constantly being klutzy. And, like, for example, if someone hands him tea and says, it's very hot. He will drink it and burn his lips and fall over. And then there, I just love that. It was like, oh, you said your name is Law, right? This is another officer. His name's Corazon, and he's a careless klutz. And as Corazon is like patting, looks like he's patting Law's head. But then it's like, oh, so watch out. He hates kids. And just throws him out the window. And then we get to see that he has himself some... a kind of some kind of a, you know, is it glam rock? I don't know. He's got...
You mean with his eye tattoo or something?
Yeah, he's got, and his, you know, and his lipstick and stuff. He kind of looks like a rip-off of Kiss in certain ways.
Huh.
And, and I also kind of think that after, you know, the whole Joker is Doflamingo's code name, seeing that his younger brother had... lips that look like the Joker's, suddenly I'm like, oh, hey, I'm noticing a connection here. And then he sets himself on fire.
Because, you know, that's normal. Set yourself on fire. Yeah.
You know, I do have to say that I think that Corazon's gimmick is a bit forced, you know? Like...
his klutziness, or...
Yeah, exactly, yeah, him being a huge klutz. I mean, it's... it can be funny and all, but at the same time, it's kind of, you know, it's a bit much, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's somebody trying to be funny, but trying too hard. And so...
Well, I don't know about actual real klutzes. I mean, with someone that actually fall down a lot...
Well, yeah, but I mean, Corazon is so exaggerated to the point where you're like, are we supposed to laugh here? I'm not sure...
Yeah, I wasn't laughing. I was just totally like, okay, eat kids. That's the only thing I got out of it.
Yeah, indeed. All right, well, let's move on to Hi-Fi Cluster Chapter 2, The One Who Decides. And, all right, let's see.
We open this page with old granny on a skateboard.
Yeah, that's pretty hilarious. And then we find out that, you know, what's his face, main character boy?
Heita, it's Heita, not Peito.
Yeah, turns out that he's not being arrested, actually, but... Kanera, yeah, is saying, you know, you've got a high, you're compatible with a hi-fi, with a hi-fi patch. We're going to, you know, we're going to recruit you. You want to join our unit, and you also meet Miki, one of the other members. And it turns out that all the people in this group, what?
It's Miri.
Miri, right, yeah. Yeah, and it turns out that they're kind of like, all the other cops hate them, so that's why they put them out of the way, but... They deal with a hostage situation, and it turns out that Heita has a... His ability is he can see things, and he can identify which ones are the hostage takers, so they, you know, so they're able to take them out without anyone getting hurt.
Mm-hmm. He can see your life, your health, your magic points, your experience, I mean... You know.
Yes. And so I have to say, I don't know. This is kind of promising because nowadays it is with action series, you gotta find a good, you know, a good magic system, pretty much. You know,
yeah.
You can't just be they are martial artists and they use ki blasts. You know, that's
they
boring.
Can use fire and
it's yeah, that's all been done. You need something
fire.
New, and I kind of like I kind of like where we're going with these abilities like this. So I'll be curious to see what happens in the third chapter, and hopefully one of the... I don't know, I'm enjoying it. I need a good action series. You know, there's not enough action manga out there.
Well, it might be it says it's a sci-fi, so...
Well, it is a sci-fi, but a sci-fi action series, so...
But it's a sci-fi mystery.
Yep, but anyway... Hey. Yeah, let's move on to Toriko, chapter 293.
Oh, okay.
Get to start off with the scene between the two demons in him, and it's kind of interesting how they're both, you know, they're talking cordially, and yeah, they're sort of like, oh, yes, it'll be your turn soon.
All those empty tables.
Yeah. Yeah, I did kind of like the scene. It was very bizarre, but yep, we end up going back and we see Komatsu, oh no, he no longer has a heart, but they're about to try to use their healing arms, but the enemies won't let them, and...
There goes the curing wand.
Yep, we see that Toriko's arm is turning red. At least I assume it's turning red because the blue demon says to the red demon, it's your turn soon. So I assume that's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and we got everyone fights. They, you know... And they have the people that can heal. They take care of Komatsu, and they're like, okay, we've got a revival butcher knife. We've got an organ fruit, which is like, okay, good, yeah, we'll make him a heart. And then you've got, and then Toriko goes serious, and he freaking just decapitates people with his hands, his hand, and just completely trashes them. But then Tepe gets in his way, and you're like, oh. Is like, is Tepe working with them willingly, or is he being controlled? Who knows? Either way, this was a kick-ass chapter.
Yep.
Indeed it was. Yep. What did you think of it?
I liked it. I liked the fact that Toriko just practically wiped out two new characters as soon as they appeared.
Unimportant.
They might have been around. They might have been around some time ago, but either way, to me, they're new and they're dead now.
Yeah. I think they may have been guys that were... left over from Gourmet Core.
Probably.
But yeah, either way, I like that we're... I don't know, this is a lot more promising than the past chapters have been. This pretty tight action. Because that's kind of the thing is, like, we haven't really had a really, really good fight in a while for Toriko, which is a bit of a shame, so I'm looking forward to seeing what we get here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move on to Judo's Chapter 3, The Demon Children of Yahara, and we get a... bit of a backstory. It turns out that the ancestor of everyone there was such a badass at judo that he could judo everyone back in the days of the Tokugawa shogunate.
Yeah, the rivalry according to this unfounded history, after the siege of Osaka was completed, the Tokugawa army encountered along the Shogun Ieyasu Tokugawa encountered what's his name? Juzo.
Yeah.
Juzo, Juzo, and they all got judo. They didn't die, but they just got judo badly.
Yeah, ignoring the fact that judo did not exist back then.
I know.
Because it's a relatively recent invention, and in fact, this dude was probably using jujitsu, which was a martial art that was used by samurai, similar in the way that knights used grappling techniques whenever they were facing armored opponents that they couldn't just cut down.
Did judo originate?
Okay, it's pretty recent.
I found it.
Oh, you did?
1882, okay. By Jigoro Kano.
Exactly, yeah. So judo took certain techniques from jujitsu and turned it into more of a sport. So this guy here was probably a jujitsu user, which makes it weird that all the other people that his descendants are using judo instead of jujitsu, because it's like you're using the sports version of a martial arts that whatever.
Yeah, I'm totally.
Yeah, unless
I mean,
of course,
it's got good art. It's got good art.
Yeah, unless of course the conceit here is that, oh no, this person didn't invent it in 18 whatever. It was invented long ago, and it's the ultimate martial art, even though it is technically a spin-off of a more combat-based martial art, and I don't know what the heck.
But the Yuga is the ultimate martial art.
Yeah, anyway.
None.
But yeah, and yeah, so we get back, and we find out that Hana's finger's broken, but they've got a certain plant that you chew up and wrap around your finger, and it basically helps heal it.
And I can't wait to see how that repairs a broken back.
Yeah,
at probably. Some point.
There will be many broken backs here, but yeah, and we also get see the other reporter that goes around and sees them watching the other fights, and you've got one dude that looks absolutely insane fighting a sumo wrestler. You meet his mom is just tossing this dude around like a sack of potatoes, and I'm just like, oh boy, that's crazy. And then we see some others. Let's see some. Of which it's kind of, you're kind of wondering, okay, which one of these are relevant? You've got two guys that look like they're judo from the judo village. But I don't know, I can't tell which one's meant to be important.
I think I have an idea who's relevant. I think, let's see, according to, the top left panel is really hard, but the
one on the bottom, it's obvious. The one in the middle,
the one in the middle is the one on the bottom, easy, but.
The dark-skinned woman is obviously going to be relevant, and then on the bottom one, the one doing the throwing and the one standing to the side will be relevant. And, yeah, so we basically get an explanation how everything works. And, you know, it's basically a judo battle royale. And that, you know, it's like judo won't lose to any other so-called martial art. And it's, you know, this is one
very
of those...
Very conceited, guys.
Yeah, this is one of those series that's going to be very hard for someone to read if they have a favorite martial art. You know, this is aimed at people that like judo. If you like jujitsu, or if you like karate, or kendo, or European martial arts, or Muay Thai, or anything else, or sumo, or whatnot, this may not be the series for you. It's kind of like how whenever I read a story that focuses on how badass and awesome Japanese swords are, and I'm just sitting there going, European knights could kick your asses, you fucks. You know, it all comes down to personal preference, and it is... honestly, this one is kind of a little hard for me to, to read in that judo isn't my favorite. I prefer karate, but then again, I'm not so fanboyish that I can't detach myself and enjoy it for what it is.
I like boxing and kickboxing. Well, boxing in general. Yeah. I've never tried boxing itself.
Yeah, I think one weakness for this series that I can see so far is the fact that judo is played up as the ultimate martial art. It's specifically, the focus is entirely on judo. There's not going to be much variety. Like with History's Strongest Disciple Kenichi, every martial art had its strengths and weaknesses.
And the main characters learned just about every other kind of martial art there was out there.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, even European styles were given the benefit of the doubt. Granted, Shigure beat them all, but it wasn't said because I use a Japanese sword, therefore I am superior. No, it was, she's just that much better than them. Yeah. You know, so... But with this one, it is going to... I don't know. Yeah, I have a hard time seeing how far it's going to go if it's just judo.
Yeah, with the Japanese, well, the Japanese, I'm sure that they're, well, actually, with the problem with Japanese, they do have other martial arts like karate and aikido and other stuff. And the problem with this, I guess legacy, what you probably went to from the series, that, like I said, yeah, that makes judo out to be the best martial art in this world, in this series world. And the thing with having these outsiders coming in with these other martial arts and not doing so well, kind of makes this series actually start to feel conceited.
It does.
In believing it is the best series. I mean, there was the other series that kind of flopped because the creator was a bit of a douchebag. Well, so this one, the creator probably doesn't realize he's being a bit of a douchebag, I realize. Yeah.
I mean, I think a problem that I find for this series, and I mean, there are series that focus entirely on a specific martial art. There's ones that the one that focuses on kendo. But the point is with there, what they do is they focus on the kendo, not saying kendo is the greatest ever. It's more, no, this is about kendo. Mm-hmm. They're not going to fight other martial arts because you don't fight other martial arts when you do kendo. With here, it's a problem when they show them start facing off against sumo wrestlers or karate users, you know. It's basically, okay, it's directly comparing itself to other martial arts, and if you happen to like other martial arts, you may be a little insulted by the conceit that judo is the best.
Yeah, we have yet to see a karate user in here. When I see a karate user, I can expect Derek to pretty much be upset.
Although, to be fair, I have seen some other martial arts manga where they have karate, they show karate off as the ultimate, where it's like a karate guy finding a kendo guy and beating him up. I'm not going to tell you because it involves ass rape.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those serious seinen shows, and it does the stupid thing where it's like, oh look, here's the main character, here's the girl she likes him back, but then suddenly, oh look, she suddenly likes this other side character, and you're like, wait, what?
What?
It was stupid, and then after that, I was like, well, this is kind of, oh well, whatever, let's see what else we got, and then it begins the next, then you begin the next chapter finding out that there's some rapist stalking the campus, going around and ass raping all the guys.
Why?
I decided to stop after that.
Do not tell anyone. This is not deserved to be known.
Exactly. I'm not. I don't even remember the name, but I'm just going to say, just be careful. But you know, nonetheless, it did have a moment where it's like karate is the ultimate, and I beat this kendo user, and I beat this judo user, etc. That moment's overshadowed
by the ass raping, as far as I know.
Pretty much, yeah. But that was another one of the reasons, because I was like, yeah, I mean, let's be fair to the other martial arts. But moving on, we get to see that he's going to fight the dude with, not only does he have sharp teeth, but he has claws on his feet, basically. And Hana's going to have to fight him, and be curious to see how this goes, but I guess we won't find out, because that's the end of the Shonen Jump run, and for people that wanted to continue reading it, your only hope is that they continue publishing it here, because the scanlators have not touched it. If you want to see more of this, vote for it, and I do want to see more of this, so I'm going to vote for it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's move on, shall we, to Nisekoi Chapter 139, which was... starts with a really fun moment with Chitoge hearing a knocking at the window, looking out and seeing, she's like, a mirror? And it's like, please open. It's like, it's talking! And, man, you get a scene of them changing, and it's weird because it's not overly sexualized, which is good, but at the same time you're wondering, why are we having a conversation while they're changing? And then at the same time you're thinking, no, it makes sense that they'd have a conversation while changing, because, you know, they need to get changed and swap out, and yet, I don't know. What I think is good is that it's not using it as a moment to have, like, a two-page spread of Chitoge taking off her shirt while pushing her chest out to show off. No, rather, it's bottom pan. It's a, you see it in a bottom panel, and the parts that would be the naughty bits are off screen. So kudos. Thank you for not making this creepy and uncomfortable. But, yep, speaking of uncomfortable, turns out that Malushka asks Chitoga, do you like him? And she's like, what? No, don't be ridiculous. And then, of course, you do a little thing where Chitoga ends up keeping the clothes, and Rocco's like, oh. I was like, wait a minute, where's Chitoga? And she's like, oh, it's an emergency. And Rocco's like, what's going on, Chitoga? And she's trying to fool him. It didn't work. And he's like, you know, with how much time we've spent together, you're not fooling me. Which I thought was entertaining. Also, one thing that I didn't notice as she was taking off the fake eyebrows that, oh, it looks like Chitoge has dark eyebrows while Malushka has light eyebrows. I'd never actually noticed.
What?
That.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And then we have, yeah, and then so we end the chapter with Malushka giving a speech about how much she likes Japan, etc. And she's like, oh, hints at these parts that she really enjoyed while she's there. And she's like, oh, my favorite part was the roller coaster ride. And she's like, oh, the roller coaster? What is she talking about? I also had a funny moment where one of the reporters was, did you fall in love with Japan? And I couldn't help but think, only in Japan would a journalist ask that question. Where it's just like, guys?
Oh, yeah, journalists.
Yeah, that's such a weird question, because, I mean, you know, if some foreign dignitary comes to the U.S., no reporter is going to ask, did you fall in love with America? Mostly because we're scared of what the answer would be. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, or if, like, you know, you go to some foreign dignitary goes to Germany and is like, did you fall in love with Germany? Or, no, sorry, let me try it. Did you fall in love with Germany? He's like, say yes, of evil, blitzkrieg you, blah, 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 etc. Nazi jokes. Sorry.
But they want to marry the country, I mean.
Well, why don't you marry the country?
Italia, I mean.
Maybe I will. Wait, what? Oh, geez, Italia, yeah. So, nonetheless, I do think that, I do think that is kind of funny, because it is kind of a fun little, I've been reading a bunch of, you know, articles online about, you know, people traveling to Japan and what kind of advice it gives you on the people or places and whatnot. And one of the things that it mentions how, oh no, and this other one where it's talking about how, oh hey, look, you know, Japanese people, here's certain things you shouldn't say to foreigners, you know, if you're traveling or whatnot, or someone visiting Japan, don't be all, oh hey, is your country, is like, how do you think awesome Japan is or whatnot, which, you know, I think Japan's nice, but okay, nonetheless, wait a sec, what's going on here? What the heck? Sorry about that. Yeah, but nonetheless, it just seems so funny. It's like, that question is, only in Japan would someone ask that, because there's such a sense of national pride there that rivals that of America. Which, and I mean, seriously, if you can rival America's national pride. Not in Germany.
Germany?
Last time we had pride, bad things happened.
Hey, it's okay. That was in the past. You can be prideful. Yeah. I like your chocolate. Wait, you make nice chocolate, right?
We mix chocolate. But anyway, moving on. Oh, like in the Simpsons episode, Burns for Kaufen des Kraftwerk, where it's like, oh, Homer, you know, you like chocolate. After all, Germany is the land of chocolate. And then Homer has the hallucination of the land of chocolate, everything made of chocolate. And he's like, chocolate. He's like, we stopped talking about that 15 minutes ago.
There was a level of that in a Simpsons game, I recall. The first level, actually, for some reason.
Yes. But yeah, anyway, let's see. I just thought that was funny. But moving on, let's talk about One Punch Man, Chapter 37, Part 3, King. And yeah, King runs away. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry, people. But then it turns out that Genos, obviously, was fighting him, and his goal, he won't have Saitama help him, because his goal was to reach the S-Class Top 10.
It's pretty awesome how it's like, how in the panel, Saitama's just still standing there, he's just standing there.
Yeah, it's just like, whatever, and Genos is doing all these awesome things. And then finally, he's like, okay, whatever, well, don't lose, and then he leaves. And I was like, that's hilarious. That's quite hilarious.
I have some advice for you, Genos. Don't lose. I'm going home now.
I did enjoy this chapter a lot more, just in general. So, yeah, good stuff. All right.
The comedy is there. You just have to look and just see it. You don't have to, like, analyze it so much. You just see it. It's funny.
Well, yeah, I know, but analysis is what I do.
I know.
And all right, let's see.
Next is Yu-Gi-Oh! Deal, but you know we don't review that.
We're not talking about that. So, was there a new Assassination Classroom chapter?
Yes, there was. Yeah, there was.
What about Shokugeki no Soma?
No, there wasn't. Wait, there was?
I don't think there was. I haven't seen one yet.
Wait, did we already go over chapter 86?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay then. Yeah. Okay then.
It's been a while. Yeah. All right. Let's let me pull up. Okay. Assassination Classroom. What chapter was it again? Chapter 102. There we go. All right. Let's do this thing. It ain't no thing like a thing and sane. Sorry. What was I talking about? Okay. Yeah. The God of Death, second hour, and let's see, now I remember what happened. They basically all split up, and they're like, oh, hey, we're going to split up into teams, each one that knows what they're good at will do it, etc., and we'll try and take him down, except, you know, doesn't work out too well for them, because they, I'm getting ahead of myself. We also go to Kuro-sensei studying in Brazil, and he's saying, ah, yes, 7-1, yes. If X and Y are 7-1, it will become a beautiful problem. And all the Brazilians are getting these faces that are just like, he's just constantly saying, 7-1, 7-1. It's like he said 7-1. It's like, you, the big Y, you trying to pick a fight? And Corson has absolutely no idea what's going on. And he's,
oh, anyway, he's chased in Brazil,
by,
right?
Yeah, he's in Brazil, and he's chased by a mob. These people, and it's like,
he's a little late to the party for the Brazil thing.
Well, yes, but nonetheless, it's close enough that is absolutely hilarious. Because it's like, obviously, this is in regards to how badly Germany beat Brazil in the finals. So, yeah, I thought that was absolutely quite possibly one of the funniest, most relevant things I've seen in a manga. Yep. Usually they just make fun of other stuff, but... Yep, so you got people that... Then the kids, they split into teams. A team as the attack team, B team as the rescue team, C team as the intel collection. And it turns out that, that Ritsu got hacked and she's acting like a slob now. Which was, that was kind of funny. And you've got, let's see, Karasumo notices, like, hey, wait a minute, where is everyone? He's like, people should be here, but they're not. And then A team attacks him and they attack the God of Death, but they're not able to because he is an absolute badass, and he decides, you know what? He says, you know what? You know, the very first thing I polished after becoming Hitman was my frontal assault skill because, you know, it's unnecessary 99% of the time, but if you aren't a master of it, you will miss that remaining 1%.
He actually thought ahead.
Yeah, it's like if you want to be the best, you gotta learn that skill. And then, of course, he beats up on everyone, gets around, and he, he kicks, what's her face again?
Hayano,
yeah. He kicks her pretty hard, right in the gut, and she is not in too good a position. I thought this scene was absolutely fantastic, and I realized that I enjoy watching characters suffer, so... Whenever you see a character get beat up and be all, and just, I don't know, it's just, when it's done well, it's just the drama of the situation is fantastic. And then we've got, what's the main character again? Nagisa, that's it.
Nagisa.
Good grief. He enters his hitman mode and he's like, I'll take care of this. And then we end the chapter. So, yeah, this was a pretty great not as good as some things I imagined to come, since I've checked out the raw pages. But yeah, what we're looking at here is pretty fantastic, just overall. And I look...
I actually understand why this chapter was number one during that week.
Yeah, it was pretty excellent. All right, yeah.
I do kind of find it funny how you say, you know, I decided to actually master my frontal assault instead because... I pretty much took it as, hey, you know what, I can mess up, and sometimes we do mess up. So, in case I do mess up, I have the chance to fight back anyway.
Uh-huh, yep. So I thought that was...
like that, to be honest.
It was smart. All right, let's move on to Fairy Tale, chapter 401, page 2, since for some reason the first page isn't loading. But anyway, so yeah, you've got Igniel and fighting Acnologia, and looks like the other Dragon Slayers. For a second, I was like, the other Dragonborn. I was like, no, 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 don't say it out loud, you fool. Yeah, the Dragon Slayers have stopped reacting, so it's like, oh, did their dragons decide, we're not coming out now.
Igniel can handle it.
Yeah. But yeah, Mardgear's like, you know what? What are you doing here? Well, I'm going to destroy you. And then Natsu jumps up and goes after Igniel, yelling at him, because like, why didn't you? It's like, where were you? How are you inside my body? How does that work? What's going on? What happened on the July 7th, 1777? Where are Gajeel's and Wendy's dragons?
He's giving all the questions. He's asking all the questions we want. We want answers.
Exactly. Which is pretty fantastic, because it's like, don't wait, even though this is a bad time. But yeah, you get to see Igniel use his breath, and it's pretty freaking fantastic because it's a giant, massive explosion, and I love the art here. And even though it doesn't do anything, Igniel ends up saying, okay, you know what? You're in a guild, so I'm going to hire you to do an official job. Look, you see that demon, that book? You need to get the book and steal it and bring it to me. Don't open it or anything. Just, you know, bring it. Don't open it. Don't destroy it. You just need to steal it. And then Natsu's like, so what's the pay? Igniel was like, hey, it's a job request. You got to give me something for doing it. And Igniel's like, okay, I'll tell you everything you want to know. And then Natsu goes after Mardgear, and we're entering into the final conflict. Sorry. Final countdown, me. But yeah.
I have to admit, ever since Igniel finally appeared, I'm actually appreciating his design. You know, he generally is a dragon. Dragons tend to look dragon. He feels like he could actually look like a human if he were to be humanified.
His face is expressive and has character. Yeah. But he still looks like your typical Western mm-hmm. fantasy dragon, and I mm-hmm. like the combination. It's a really mm-hmm. well done. Yes, I actually really like this chapter, and I also do kind of appreciate how Mashima doesn't dwell too long on the emotion, and actually gets into some comedy in there. But mm-hmm. all right, let us move on to the Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 94. We need to move fast because I'm running out of battery here.
You are? You don't have a charger?
I do have a charger, but I left it upstairs.
Oh my goodness. Okay, let's go.
Yep, so this one is pretty badass, because you've got the knights are all, oh hey, wait, you're just telling us that what we thought for all these years was wrong. And then you find out that it's like, oh yeah, remember how Hauser went and was escorting, what's his face again? Hendrickson. I was escorting Hendrickson. Is like, oh yeah, you know what, they got caught under the collapse, but I'm sure they're fine. And then we find out that they are not fine.
He was escorting Dreyfus, by the way, but yeah. Hauser is not doing fine.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell whether he's still alive or not by his expression, but given how him and Rangiku Matsumoto are going to have matching scars, I don't think he's doing too well. Because there is a massive hole missing from him, and there is...
Unless the healers on the Seven Deadly Sins can find him in time.
Bro, don't forget that there is a thing that can bring people back to life, so maybe that will be used to bring him back to life. Either way, this is kind of a moment where...
Oh yeah, that fountain or water place that Bond was in.
Yeah, and the thing that I really like about this is that, you know, it doesn't confirm whether he's dead, but it gives us very compelling evidence that Hauser is dead, and then it leaves it at that, and we're left to wonder, what the heck's going on?
Yeah.
But then we get the Seven Deadly Sins come flying out, and we get to see Hendrickson shows up, and he's the old demon, and he's going to go after Elizabeth, and everyone tries fighting him, but he is way too powerful. He is as OP as OP gets, because he has an attack that's basically Dark Snow, that if it touches you, it kills you.
Insta-kill.
And everyone's like, don't let that Black Snow touch you. And the guys are like, how can we avoid that? And then turns out that that's not their only problem, because Hendrickson comes and rips their heads off.
Oh, yeah, I just noticed that part there. Holy crap.
Yep, but then we get to see, what's his face? The dude with the big saw sword.
Slade,
that's it. Yeah, that should be easy to remember. Looks like he's able to stop Hendrickson and start an attack, and him and his other and the other knights are managed to, you know, use their abilities against him, except all their impressive powers do nothing. He's okay. And then Elizabeth wakes up and she's like, oh, everyone needs to get away. I don't want any more sacrifices. And then we find out that there's a certain someone that is saying, Grimoire Meliodas, you have to protect Elizabeth. And it turns out that Veronica is alive, and she's saying that Ellie is a special being, and sort of wondering, wait, why is she special? What's the deal here?
Oh, wait, the question is, why is Veronica alive? Is that crutches next to her?
Yeah, well, it would appear. Huh. I have to say I'm not all that surprised, but... Yeah, anyway, talk about what you think of the chapter.
She got, like, punctured to the chest or head or something.
Yeah. Go ahead and say what you think about the chapter. I need to go get my power cord. I'll be right back.
All right. Well, like, the chapter was pretty good in terms of the fight. As Derek said, Hendrickson's become as OP can get, and he gets any more OP, and they still cannot beat him. And, well, hopefully... Suzuki will actually learn from Leech's mistake of not making him become like an idol. I do gotta say, that Dark Snow is pretty dang, near dang impossible to avoid, because in terms of, you know, like, oh, what is that? Why don't we just avoid instead of just staring at it? but then you can't really avoid it, because look, it's he called the Dark Snow. I mean, it's snow. You can't dodge snow. Can you dodge a snowflake? You know,
yeah, that's the thing, is like, sure, it's slow, but there's a million of them. There's no way not to get hit. But it is showing that they are not as densely packed as actual snow is when it's falling. So, yeah. Anyway.
You know, it'd be wasting a lot of ink if he were to do it like that. Think about it.
Well, yeah. He's like, hey, Kubo, want to do a guest page?
All my ink is going to be dead. I'll just use yours.
You use a ton anyway.
Actually, right. You should look at Soul Eater. Soul Eater just uses black and white.
Whoa, yeah, of course. Yeah, there it makes sense. It needs a dark sort of atmosphere.
Some pages are just complete black, and you're like, was this even needed?
Well, yeah. All right. Okay, I think is that all the chapters?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Yep, excellent. Let's go ahead and move on. We are going to wrap things up. This has been Manga Cubed for the week of September 22nd. We went over Shokugeki no Soma Volume 2 and Genshiken Nidaime Volume 14. Volume 14. It was Volume 5.
Nidaime Volume 5.
What does it say 5?
I don't know. I just because I count as the entire thing.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's just part 2 of Genshiken, but
nonetheless. Also, just a bit of noteworthy news is that actually we were told that we'd have 3 series, but we're actually getting 4. We're getting a new Jump series, EID Live. This one's by Akira Amano, the creator of Reborn.
Funny, I actually checked that out before it even came out.
What I'm kind of curious is this going to be we'll do three chapters and then that's it, or is it a new series completely?
To explain about that series, I'm not sure. It's only about like 3 chapters total, because it premiered on that one mobile Shonen Jump reasoning, like mobile, where the series was like they were updated like, I think like 3 months each within 3 months of time or something. So it just felt like much.
So there may only be 3 chapters anyway. Okay.
It may be. I'm not sure. Doesn't seem like
a continuation
of this one.
All right, well, let's go through the author comments. We've got Sporting Salt's Yuto Kubota. Thanks to everyone who has helped out, and thanks to all the readers. I look forward to your support.
I like the fact that his avatar actually looks like a normal... Okay, other than the eyes, actually looks normal compared to all the other...
Some of the other ones, yeah.
Guys, I mean, just look at Hi-Fi Cluster and Nisekoi and do those.
Yeah.
Holy, man, holy. Okay, Glitches to take Kubo. The light switch is fixed. My bath. It's bright.
I need a brighter light in my bath.
Actually, thank goodness that the bath light in the bathroom doesn't go off, because the light only goes off for me is the one in my room that I sleep in, the one in the hallway, and the one in the kitchen.
Indeed.
Always those three.
Alright, One Piece is Eiichiro Oda. The audition tape for the voice actor for Sabo was amazing. Please watch on 9/28. The voice actor for Sabo will be ...
Dude, you just spoiled it.
Yeah. Well, anyone reading this already knows.
Well, yeah, that is true, but for the anime viewers...
They're not reading this. They're not reading this.
Oh, okay. Oh, I just realized, man, that was just dumb. Okay, that was a dumb moment.
Yes.
Expect more dumb moments from Mo. Anyways. Hi-Fi Clusters, Ipe Goto. It really irritates me that the bed I had delivered to my studio is a bit too big. Guess I'll have to live with it. My bed got too small, and we had to throw it out.
Yeah, a lot of the beds that I sleep on, my feet end up hanging over the end, but then I got a nice big double bed, or queen size, or whatever. I don't know, the one that's meant for two people, but I use it all to myself.
Yeah, I have it too. Yep. All to myself. I think the queen size.
Indeed. Alright, Toriko's Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. Don't snack in between meals. Eat 3 meals a day and chew your food well. Just doing that will have you feeling great. It's like he's trying to counteract the damage his series does to people's sense of how much they can eat.
here's some advice for me. Don't try and eat a meal or snack while you're doing something like watching TV or something. Unless you're used to it, but at the same time, it's better to focus straight on eating and then doing what you gotta do. Because otherwise, you'll end up having a very slow appetite like I have.
Indeed. Alright, what's the next one?
I'm skinny.
What's the next one?
Judo's is Shinsuke Kondo. Shichinohe will defeat Reiner and become the greatest in the judo heavyweight class. I believe. What? Okay, so he watches judo.
Okay. You went through judo's?
Yeah, I went through judo's.
Okay. Nisekoi is now Shikomi. Over the summer, I went to the Monster Hunter exhibit in Shibuya. The new game will be released soon, and I can't wait.
I hate the fact I break my PSP trying to play Monster Hunter Tri-D or something.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, it's time to do the rankings. All right, let me just make sure I got my rankings. Let's see. 1, 2, 3. 4. All right. My fourth place is Bleach, actually.
Yeah, okay.
I just liked it that we're getting a little focus on other characters rather than just the same focus on the same battle. So I enjoyed that. What's your number 4?
Noodles. I liked it a bit because of the other than the whole historical accuracies and stuff. The art was good. The fights. It was okay. It was, kind of leading up to something. And of course, that's the third chapter, so now we don't know what's going to happen next until the devs just feel good about it.
Yeah.
So I'm just going into hope that because I do see potential out of this one. I see potential out of all three of them. Just that, I feel that, in terms of the competition, only one of them will make it through. And at some point, if none of them make it through, all three of them will be gone. Be like, why are we both in the first place?
Yeah, that is kind of true. But still, I like it's a nice little activity to see these sort of
games. Well, I do have a feeling one of these will stick. I just don't know which one.
Yeah, well.
Although I do have one I do like, I would stick.
Indeed. All right, well, my third place is Toriko. Just same because here. Finally some badass action again.
Yeah, I mean, after the whole Komatsu getting his heart, smushed, I'm like, okay, he's totally dead.
And now he's probably not, because they can bring people back from the dead, apparently.
We have an organ fruit, just for this. Just in case something happens. What happens if something happens to us? Don't worry, we have organ fruit for you, too. Indeed. Organ fruit for everyone. What about us? We're the bad guys. You don't get one.
No organ fruits for you. Alright, number 2. My number 2 was Judo's, actually.
Okay.
Just because I really like the action, and I'm really wanting to know what happens next. Now this goes from here on out. Even though I'm like, judo isn't my number one, I still enjoy it enough to be able to want to know more. What happens next, and hopefully we'll get what happens next. All right, what's your number 2?
Hi-Fi Cluster.
Hi-Fi Cluster, okay.
Well, okay, I guess you could say the info dump may have been a bit much at some point, but at least it still had some emphasis on, explaining what the abilities are like and some more emphasis on how they work, Kandera's Sasaki Kojiro was only able to work if he was in a certain certain polls to use it instead of like just using whatever he wants. So it has potential. I'm hoping to see more other pop, more famous historical figures immortalized in this series in some way.
Yeah.
I mean, some that I would like to see. I'm trying to think of ones I want to see. I want to see Suke Leon. I want to see how that guy works.
Yeah.
Just since Japan's so interested in him. Who else? Julius Caesar. George Washington. Benjamin Franklin. Wait, how do you work?
Yeah, well,
like I said, there's so many historical figures. I mean, indeed. There's just so many. I just want to say, I just laugh so hard thinking about how they have to work out on this one.
Yep. So, alright, number one was, of course, One Piece, because finally we get the flashback. We've been teased so much.
Yeah, that's true. Like, look at the flashback, no flashback. Look at the flashback, no flashback. Flashback! Yes, flashback. Who's this guy? This is the guy we've been waiting to see, right? This guy is not who we thought he'd be, but then again, we had expectations of too much. I did.
Yeah, I have to say, I am quite... Yeah.
I mean, the fact that Corazon doesn't even talk is going to make it hard, you know?
Yeah, we'll see what they...
I get the feeling he'll probably talk at some point. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens.
Make sure that'll make it seem like he's talking.
Yeah, I am curious to see how long this flashback goes for. I mean, granted, this seems like it's time for the long one, but we'll see.
Wait, if it's a flashback, and you know how flashbacks work in One Piece, with major characters...
Yeah.
The next. No, I'm not going to say it.
I highly doubt that. I don't know. I mean,
Does he have his own pirate crew? His own pirate crew.
Yeah, he does. So we'll see. I think Law is going to be more of an ally than a crew member. But at the same time, I mean, there's this sort of sense in the One Piece community that there's only going to be one more crew member, which Oda did kind of in the beginning say that Luffy wanted 10 crew members. But considering that we're only just a little bit more than halfway through the entire series, chances are that I would be surprised if we went through the entire series without getting any more new crew members. I think that Jinbei is probably our strong contender for a new crew member, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
remember Brook of the Eight.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if if Law ends up joining, because he fits in well with the rest of the crew. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, he's kind of like the straight man to all their goofballs.
And we already got a doctor, though, the problem.
True. So that's... chances of him joining are very low, but I wouldn't be all very surprised if he does join, you know? But...
plus, if he does join, it'd be very easy to save lives.
True. Very true. But, yeah. Anyway, I think that about wraps things up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, this has been Manga Cubed. If you have any questions or comments, send them to burninglizardstudios@gmail.com or go to burninglizardstudios.com to leave your comments on the episode. If you want to send a tweet, send it to @burninglizard. And I think that wraps things up. So just remember, the manga is always better, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
No.